This is Debbie Dane, and I'm speaking with Euterpe Dukakis on Thursday, November 21st, 1985. We're beginning this interview at 3:30. We're about to interview Euterpe Dukakis about her immigration experience from Greece in 1913. She was 9 years old.
Mrs. Dukakis, if you could tell me the day you were born and the name of the town in Greece.
I was born on September the 4th, 1903, in the city of Larissa, which is in northern Greece.
Will you describe the type of town it was, the size, what people did for living?
It is and it was one of the larger cities of Greece. It's a military, not exactly a post, but shall I say a military center. It always has been because it is in northern Greece and it is in a city. And particularly in those days, the borders were not terribly far away from Turkey and the Balkan states. It is now over 200,000. It's one of the, probably about the third city in size. It's still a great military center for Greece. My father was a bookkeeper in a big market. We were not rich. We were, in fact, fairly poor. But as far as I was concerned, I had all I needed as a child, and it never occurred to me that we weren't. Mm-hmm. As it was in Greece, as it is now, and as it was then, the young people, unless they have a great deal of the family, has property and money, the future is not a very bright one. And at that time, everybody was going to America. And so my older brother, I had two brothers and four sisters, my older brother, Nicholas, was 18 and decided that Greece didn't have very much of a future for him at the time, at any rate, so he decided to go to the United States, to come to the United States. My father had a cousin here who lived in Manchester, New Hampshire, with whom my brother got in contact, and he sent the money for him to come to the United States. So he left, came here, was on his own, could speak no English, and found a job in a shoe factory. In 2 years, he sent enough money so that my younger brother could join him, my brother Adam. And in another, must have been 4 years, they sent money for the six of us to come. At that time, in 1912, 1913, the steamship companies were carrying on a great deal of competition to bring in immigrants from the United States because there was a great need for them in building the railroads out toward the west, in our factories, shoe factories, textile factories, steel factories, all that. And so the steamship companies proceeded to entice the young men, particularly from southern and central Europe, to come to the United States. And in fact, the competition was so strong that my brothers got the tickets for us to come, and they cost $80 for the six of us.
For all six?
All six of us.
No kidding.
So we came on a boat that had been a coal ship, coal freighter, had been very quick, hurriedly changed to an immigrant boat, and the conditions were very, very bad. So bad that my father protested to the administration of the boat that he would not have his family housed around the hold of the ship, and that's where it was, tiers of bunks, one on top of the other for the men, and the quarters for the women were not much better. At any rate, we did get better quarters, and we did the best we could. The weather was terrible. It was in March, the end of March and the beginning of April. The food was worse, but we managed to get here. And when we arrived in New York, I did not see the Statue of Liberty, incidentally. We must have been at night, and I didn't know anything about it. I learned about that much later. We were in quarantine in New York for a day, and then we were allowed to go to Ellis Island. And we were herded there like sheep, and there we were to be examined, and all very fearful that we might not be found healthy enough and might be sent back. My father referred to the Ellis Island as the Palace of Tears or Sighs because everyone was so fearful. My younger sister and I were very, very innocent. We didn't know what was going on. We went wherever that we were told, but we didn't like it when the doctor stuck his finger in our eyelid and turned it up for a very bad disease that was very communicable and infectious and so contagious, so we didn't. We got through all right. And we did find our brother Nick down at the pier looking for us, and my sister Helen remembered him and recognized him and started yelling and calling Nick, 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 Nico, Nico, Nico. And we did. He received us and had room for, found, I had reservations for us to go on the Fall River line to Fall River and then to Brockton, and from Brockton by train to Haverhill, Massachusetts. I cannot say that I found everything ready for us. A house, furniture, food, my first real meal, other than the box which had been given to us on Ellis Island as we left it, a sandwich and a banana, the likes of which we had never seen before and didn't know how to eat it. But my first real meal in the United States was lamb chops and French fried potatoes, which was fortunately kind of indicative of my life in the United States. My brother said had all the knocks. We were settled in Haverhill. I went through the public schools. I was very fortunate in having wonderful teachers who were interested in me and in my progress. I went through Haverhill High School and then Bates College and taught 4 years in two small towns, one in New Hampshire and one in Massachusetts. And then I was married to my husband, Panos, P-A-N-O-S, Panos, who was a young physician trying to make his way in Boston. We had one child for Stelian within in due time, and then Michael came, and that is my life. America has been truly the promised land for me.
I have a few questions for you.
Very well. Shoot.
Back in Greece, when your brothers were here, did they write home?
Oh, yes, very, very often.
Did they paint a picture of America for you?
They sent us cards, and they also told us that houses could be moved from place to place, and we couldn't believe such a thing.
Okay.
Well, of course, we thought of houses being built with stone. You don't move a stone house. Mm-hmm. And we didn't. There were many things that they would write to us that we couldn't believe because we had no background and no knowledge to believe such things.
Was their life hard for them?
My older brother went through a great many knocks because he came in 1907, and soon after he arrived here, there was a big panic, as they call them. We call them the Depression. In those days, they called them a panic. Mm-hmm. And he lived on boiled beans for quite a while because factories were closed. He had saved some money and had to use that up to live from day to day. Fortunately, that was over, and then things straightened out, and he was able to work and gather enough dollars to send for my younger brother.
Did he ever consider coming back to Greece, going back to Greece?
I think that when he first started, I remember when he was about to leave to come to the United States, and my mother was... he waited so that my mother could be delivered of our youngest sister. And when he went to see her after the baby was born, you see, there were three of us, three girls already. And she looked up at him and she said, "Oh, Nico, another girl." And he said, "Mother, don't you worry. I'll stay in the United States another 2 years for her." What he meant was that he was going to the United States and he was going to work hard to make dowries for his sisters so that they could be married. Because in those days, and the custom isn't too far from there today, but not so bad because the girls are educated now in Greece and going to careers. What he meant was that he would gather enough money so that they could be given a dowry to marry. Instead, we all came here. And I was the first one to go back to Greece on a trip.
No kidding.
Yeah. In 1936, yeah. My husband and I and my mother-in-law went to Greece to the summer of 1936. It was a wonderful return. And I've been there 6 more times, and I've enjoyed every trip, but this is home.
Yeah. Then your other brother went. Was it hard for your mother to let her other son go?
My mother cried all the time. Hmm. If a letter didn't come when she expected it, she'd go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was she anxious to come here, or did she just wish she'd come here?
No. She never, in fact, we used to tease her. She never wanted to come visit the old country. And we used to say to her, "Mother, everybody wants to go to Greece. Don't you want to go and see your sisters? Go back to Greece? What for? All that I love, all that I treasure is here. What do I want to go back to Greece for?" She never did.
And your father, did he want to leave when it came time to go?
Oh, yes, he was ready to. Yes. The boys were here, and they wanted us to come. It was uniting the family again. My mother wanted it very much. That was it. And we got along very well. My brothers did well in the United States. My sisters married by the old custom into very good marriages, my two sisters. Mm-hmm. This was the place for us, and we've never wanted to go back to live there.
Did you ever hear the stories? Probably your brothers blew that balloon as far as the gold in the streets and...
Oh, yes, of course. Hmm. Yes, those stories went, we knew it wasn't so because my brothers told us the difficulties they had. But they didn't complain. They just simply stating facts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And on Ellis Island, can you remember, as if you were a television camera, what it looked like? Were there lots of people there in 1913?
It was crowded because ours was not the only immigrant ship that had docked and was being processed. There were several at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think it's very difficult for people to understand what was happening in those days. People were coming to the United States in droves from everywhere, even from on the West Coast with the Oriental people, the Chinese particularly, and the Japanese, because this was the promised land. This was the land that was advertised, and also that we heard about, that there were opportunities here that we didn't have in the old countries.
Mm-hmm. When you came to Haverhill and brought with you your Greek culture, did you maintain certain holidays and...
Oh, yes, we always have, yes.
What are some of those?
Well, we have, of course, we have Christmas and we have Easter, though Christmas is not a... It is now for us because we are here. We're Americans. In Greece, Christmas is a religious holiday, not a folk holiday. Easter is the New Year is the time of exchanging gifts and celebrating parties and that sort of thing. Easter is the holiest time of the year. It starts 40 days before Easter, and the fasting of the days, and the preparing the house, and the preparing for Easter, and the last week with all the wonderful celebrating, shall we call it, of the Passion during the week before Easter, and then the going to church constantly of that week, and then finally the Good Friday, which is a very sad, because it's the reenactment of the Passion of Jesus. And then the Saturday midnight mass, when everyone goes and has a candle, and there is the joyous declaration of Christ is risen, you know. And then the next day, when families get together out of doors, and the roast lambs out of doors, and the dying of red eggs, and it's a very festive time. It was then, and I suspect it still is. That was very nice, and we do as much of that as we can. I used to when the boys were very young, the calendar in the Greek church was still the Julian calendar, whereas we go by the Gregorian now, as you know. And so we have two Christmases, two Easters. We still have two Easters occasionally. And I used to say to the boys, "See how lucky we are. We have we have two Christmases and we have two Easters." And we still do, of course, occasionally. Every 4 years, I think we have the same date, but usually. So we celebrate both.
And food? How about food? Did your mother bring over?
Well, we always know she didn't bring over the food. We had plenty of food here. Yes, but there were, of course, all the traditional dishes that we have, like lamb for Easter. And there was no particular food for Christmas, but, of course, we'd have turkey or chicken mostly. In those days, when we were young, there weren't many turkeys being raised, and it wasn't advertised the way it is now. And turkey was very expensive, incidentally, then, because there weren't so many. Now, of course, everybody has turkey. So, and we exchange gifts. Families get together. When we gather for Thanksgiving and Christmas, we're about 25 now. Not with my own family, because now I go with Kitty and Michael, and wherever they go, I go too. And it's Kitty's family that we get together. We have a very large family with all the different ones involved.
When you first came, of course, you spoke Greek because you were a Greek
naturally.
Girl. How did you learn English? I know you went to school when you got here.
Well, as you know, my family didn't speak English. My brother spoke English, but it was very a broken kind of ordinary street English. My father and mother couldn't speak. My mother never spoke English. She was at home all the time. If she ever went out, we took her out ourselves. We girls took her into town, and we did all the talking for her. And her life was, of course, among some Greek neighbors and the church. And the family, so that I heard English almost only at school. And I learned my English from teachers, mostly. At first, I couldn't speak it at all. And my sister, who is 3 years younger than I, couldn't either. Hardly say more than yes and no and hello and how do you do. And my younger brother was very cross. And he said to my mother, "What's the matter with these girls? Are they stupid? Why can't they hear? They've been all these months and they don't know how to speak English yet." Well, at 6 months, and it happened to me, it happened to Efti. It was like the coming down of the Holy Spirit on the apostles and the disciples of Jesus. We spoke English, just like that.
It's wonderful, amazing. Yeah.
But that's why I don't understand this bilingual thing, this English as a second language. But things are different now. There weren't many Greek children in school, so that I was supposed to speak, for me to speak Greek with. Neither in my, there weren't any children in my neighborhood. I had one other little Greek girl with whom I was friends and still am. So that I'd learned my English from in school. Of course, that's a different story. You take all the children here who are Hispanics, And the whole school is full of Hispanic children. How are they going to learn to speak English? Mm-hmm. The teacher isn't enough. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So maybe it is useful. Maybe it should be.
You started to speak English, and then with school you started to learn how to read English.
It was no problem because I could read Greek, and all I had to do was to learn the pronunciation of syllables and the letters, and mm-hmm. that's all it was. It was no problem. Mm-hmm. Arithmetic was I knew arithmetic from the Greek school. I had gone 2 years, full years in Greece, and part of 1 year into the third grade. It was no problem at all in that way. Mm-hmm. As long as I just learned the pronunciation, and it was no problem.
And your principal, he was very helpful to you?
Oh, he was wonderful to me. I was one of the few immigrant children. I happened to have one very, very thick, long braid of black hair down my back. That was very unusual. It wasn't noticeable. So from that, then he made it. He was so wonderfully helpful. He was like a second father to me, you know, sort of an intellectual father. Mm-hmm. And he made a great deal of the American life available to me, which I would not have had. Mm-hmm. And I had very fine American teachers, Yankee, shall I say, who invited my sister and me to their homes, and we had a wonderful taste of the real American life. I was very fortunate.
As far as your education goes, I mean, you went off to college. Was that unusual coming from Greece, where didn't women stay in the home?
It was very unusual. In fact, the Greek people of Haverhill thought my parents were out of their mind when they let me go. Not only to go to college, which no other Greek girl had done in Haverhill, the community of 3,000 Greeks, but that I went away to school 160 miles away and co-educational also. It was really quite a shock.
Was it your idea? Did you want to?
Yes. And I have a feeling that if we had stayed in Greece, that my brothers would have seen to it that there were enough funds in the family so I could have gone on to more than just the common, the elementary school. Mm-hmm. And that I should go to the gymnasium, as it was called, and probably have graduated so I could teach in Greece. So I worked. I worked summers. I worked Friday afternoon and Saturday all through high school and saved my money. I knew that I would have to do that and show that I really wanted to go to college. My brothers helped me, but I worked every summer. I worked in the shoe factory and earned enough for my tuition at least. And it wasn't very scholarship in college every year. It wasn't very much, but it was helpful. And
were they supportive, your parents?
Very supportive.
When you first came in school, and you were one of the only Greek girls there, did you ever feel like an outsider in the first years that you were here?
I was too young to be to feel an outsider. My life was very busy, you know. I didn't feel an outsider because I had everything. I had my family. I had my school. Mm-hmm. I played games outside. Mm-hmm. My sister and I played together, and I had a very good friend, Thelxie, who's still my friend, and we see each other every year. When I go back to Lewiston, Maine, she's the college. She lives in Auburn, which is uh-huh. just across the river. I didn't feel an outsider at all.
And what was your maiden name? What did you come
Boukis. With? Euterpe Boukis, Boukis.
How did you meet your husband?
Let's see. How did I meet
him? Just to jump a little bit, because I was thinking Boukis
to Dukas. My sister, my oldest sister, married Tom Nukas, who was to be a lawyer in Lowell, Massachusetts. And they were friends with the Dukakises. And I met my husband just because the two families were friends. Then my husband went to Bates for a year. He went to Boston University for a year. but didn't like it because he wanted some campus life. He had done his college preparatory work at the American International College in Springfield. It was then a school, a preparatory school, particularly for foreign-born, and they stressed, the teaching of English. And he was very happy there. He, too, was taken under his wing, under the wing of one of the professors there who encouraged him a great deal and invited him to their home and would invite him for Thanksgiving, for instance, at their home and that sort of thing. And he liked the campus life, you see. And so when he went to Boston University, granted that it was very cheap and he could live very cheaply in the city, still he wanted campus life, and so he transferred to Bates and was very happy there and did a great deal of work, extra work there, and was ready to go. In those days, an undergraduate degree
This is the end of side one, Euterpe Dukakis, number 091. I don't know what time it is.
I did have, but I...
This is the beginning of side two, Euterpe Dukakis, number 091. It's 4:05.
Where were we?
You were talking about your husband, and he was at Bates.
Yes, he went. In fact, he graduated. He left Bates, and was accepted at Harvard Medical School. And in those days, they did not require an undergraduate degree. But he had really had about 3 years of college pre-medical course, that's it, pre-medical. And he'd had enough of it. Anyway, he was accepted at Harvard Medical, graduated in 1924.
And you married?
1929. Mm-hmm. He'd had a great deal of hospital training, mm-hmm. so he was able, see, in those days it wasn't quite as specialized as it is now, and he was able to, he had good gynecological and obstetrical preparation in the hospitals. At the lying-in hospital, mm-hmm. that was. Also, he trained at the Providence City Hospital, very good for pediatrics. Mm-hmm. And he was his first internship and residence was at the Boston City Hospital in surgery. Mm-hmm. So he really did, and he was very good. He was one of the early very early Greek doctors in Boston, and. Had a very good reputation among non-Greek people. And in fact, Michael used to say he won his first term for governor because everybody had been either operated on by his father or somebody in the family or had been. He was very well known, you see.
And for you to marry another Greek, he had come from Greece, I take it.
Yes, he was an immigrant too. He came when he was 16.
Uh-huh. Did you think you'd grow up and marry a Greek when you were here? You become.
Oh yes, I never was interested in anyone, but
no kidding.
It was early then. You mm-hmm. see, we were brought up in a Greek environment, and it was right because my generation perhaps of girls anyway. Of course, the Greek young men did marry non Greeks, but in my generation, I think it was the best thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You lived in a Greek community in Haverhill.
Yes.
Was it a very tight community, or?
No, we had the friends. You see, we knew what other people. This is awful. Do you want to take?
We were just talking about the Greek community in Haverhill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it a very tight community? Did people know each other?
Yes, they knew each other. Of course, the church was a center. A religious as well as a social center, but we had other friends as well. Uh-huh. Once I graduated from high school, I didn't go back. I went back home only for vacations. I taught away from home, and then After 4 years of teaching, I was married and lived in Boston and then in Brookline, so I really didn't go back to Haverhill very much. And I don't now. Occasionally I go. I have two sisters there, but they come here more than I go there. Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, and here my connections are with the whole community. I mean, the larger community as well as the Greek community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Church, well, of course, I go to Greek church, and I belong to Greek organizations, but I belong to American organizations. Women's Club, Junior League, League of Women Voters, what else? All sorts of things.
Were there Greek clubs? I understand, who was I just talking with the other day? German. A German woman who came, and they were in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And they had lots of German clubs, and they was it the same with the Greek?
Yes, we had some. I belong to the, still do belong to the Greek College Club, University Club. That was one of the first organizations I joined when I was married. In Haverhill, we didn't have anything like that, but in Boston, it was a very thriving club. It still is. I can't attend meetings anymore because they meet at night, and I can't go out at night, of course. And when my husband was living, we went together to all the meetings. Mm-hmm. There is a Hellenic Medical Society, and there's also the Norfolk Medical Society, to which my husband and I would go, and we did. You know, it's part. Again, you cannot, if you drop everything of your own kind, it's like cutting off part of you. You may be able to do without your arm, but is it the best thing for you to do? You need both arms, mm-hmm. both hands. Mm-hmm. There are people who just feel that they are Americans and want to be, but it isn't. My son Michael, he brings up his Greek background all the time. He reads Greek, and he does Greek, and he speaks Spanish. He reads Italian speech before Italians. He's really a wonderful guy. Don't you think so, Dean? I say that objectively. In fact, I've always been able to look at my children objectively.
Like every mother. Let's talk about that just for a few more minutes. First we'll go in through your citizenship. Did you have to, you came at 9, did you have to go through getting papers?
Yes. Now, I went to apply for my citizenship papers early. I applied when I was 18 or 19, I think. I had, of course, plenty of years here, so I could. But I would not have been able to get them, or at least I wouldn't have been able to vote. How was that? Why did I wait until after? Something about the laws then, which have changed on citizenship. At any rate, I went to signed up when I was about 18 or 19 at the county courthouse, and the officer there, that the clerk said, "What do you do this? You're going to marry an American anyway, so what's the sense of yours?" I said, "I want to get my own citizenship for myself." Well, as it happened, when I did get my citizenship, ready to get my citizenship, the law had changed so that women could get it, would not have their own citizenship if they married somebody. They have to go through the process themselves. Anyway, I became I was more than 21 because it was my first year teaching that I had to come back from Ashland, New Hampshire to go and get my papers. And that was all right. I got my citizenship and voted as soon as I could. I've never failed. As far as back as I can remember, I've never failed to vote.
Was that a happy day?
Oh, yes, very much so. Very proud. Very happy.
Did your parents get citizenship?
My parents did not, but all my sisters and brothers did. We all did, became citizens.
And then a little discussion about that, about being an American of Greek heritage. You were born in Greece and became an American citizen. Two questions. One is, when did you feel like an American?
Well, of course, when I was young, those things didn't really matter. When I was very young, it didn't come up. Afterwards, well, How do you acquire these things? It's hard to say. But I know one thing. Now, I'm an American in America, in the United States, where everything that has to do with the life in the United States. And when something is Greek, the Greek comes out in me. I speak Greek with those who speak Greek to me. In the church, it's Greek. We have certain things, certain customs which we celebrate. And that is, I feel Greek then. So that I'm really part of the, both lives. Should I throw away my Greekism? When I marry, do I forsake my family? I don't. All that my family has meant to me continues to mean to me, but I take on a husband and his family also. And I expect that he has his family. And it's part of our lives. It's part of my roots. Otherwise, I couldn't be a whole person. Michael and I have discussed this. And he himself, he feels that Greek in him, that his Hellenism, he feels it very strongly. And he's, it has added, and it is a big dimension in his life. Mm-hmm. And it should be that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about Michael's children? Even they have a little feeling and knowledge. Of course, I have tried to give them as much of a background because I feel it's a strength to know your background. It's a strength to know your roots. It gives you that sense of security, shall we say, that the past is part of you. None of us are born suddenly. We're born with what has come back of us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think that's wonderful.
How do the rest of your prospects, your feel about this? Have you had other interviews?
Yes, some say mostly people that came because of persecution don't look back, most of them, that I've talked to.
They can't. They do, it's bitterness, it's exactly. Sorrow, it's misery.
So they started here. Mm-hmm. But they bring, and most of these, of course, are Jewish people. They bring their religion. They bring that culture that, mm-hmm. as we know, is all over the world. And that's what gives them strength. Mm-hmm. And it's their heritage in the Word. But not tied to a country anymore, mm-hmm. at all.
No, it isn't a country. It's an idea. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. Mm-hmm. You take that with you, always.
But this German woman, I'm trying to think of without the religious. She pretty much left Germany behind, except for some. But she, I think, because of World War II and the cultural reasons there, mm-hmm. she wasn't as outspoken about how much she was tied to her country. Mm-hmm.
I was very young, but whatever the life I had in Greece was a very happy one. I was very sorry to leave my grandmother, but she wouldn't come with us. She was 80 years old, and she said she was too old to change her life. So she went back to the village in the mountains of Epirus, and fortunately she had a daughter there who took care of her until she died when she was 95. Mm-hmm. But I had a happy childhood. I had a happy childhood here.
This is one thing, I mean, people will know this, but for the future generations, you represent, really, I'm sure everyone's told you this, and it's paved some campaign trails, the American dream. Mm-hmm. You've come mm-hmm. from another culture, mm-hmm. went to college here, which you might not have done, and you raised two sons. And one of them has grown up to be an American citizen who is now the governor of the state of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you represent...
Yeah, it was really if it was a dream, I did not... I always said to myself, I must not dream the dreams for my children, for my sons. They were to do the dreaming themselves. They should make their own dreams. But... It, It couldn't have been a happier life. We've had our sorrows. We lost a son, grown up, who was struck by a hit-and-run driver and left a vegetable, lived for about 4.5 months between life and death. It's a constant pain, a sad memory. But everybody has to. If you live long enough, everybody will have sorrow, will have some misery, perhaps some people have more than others. But I for myself, I feel that I have been, whatever you want to call it, God or luck or whatever, I have coming to the United States and living here and has really been a reality of the promised land. I was very fortunate, and I think all my family have been fortunate in having come to the United States.
Would you do me a favor, because my voice will be taken away when in the future on the tape, if you would say your full name, first name, maiden name, last name, married name, and then say your son's name and say what year he was elected and say that he is the governor of Massachusetts.
I thought we said that.
But they won't hear that on my side.
I see. Oh, you didn't say that. Well, I was born Euterpe Boukas, and I'm now Euterpe Boukas Dukakis. I married Panos Stelian Dukakis, who was a physician, a very well-respected physician. We had two children. We have only one now. Our older boy was unfortunately struck by a hit-and-run driver and was left very, very ill and died. I have one son now, and he's the governor of Massachusetts. Has been to me a very wonderful country.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
I hope you'll edit that.
When you're ready. This is the end of side two with Mrs. Euterpe Dukakis, number 091. It's 421.